What is up? We are back. After a very, very long hiatus, we are back. We are not any longer riding the pine. It is now just me, and it's on sides and on cover. Same premise, really, talking about a lot of college sports. We will still have Al. Al has coaching duties. Obviously, can't really record just kind of whenever anymore, but he will be a very, very frequent recurring guest, especially as we get into the college basketball season. And we'll try to get him on for college football as well. We'll also have other guests as well to not just talk about in the stadium and on the field, but off the field at the tailgate. Today on the show, it's just really a college football preview. We're going to get into the storylines of the year. We're going to talk about the biggest games that I feel will affect the college football playoff race as we move through the season. We're going to talk about my bowl predictions, which I think there's some pretty big ones in there, especially one. And then I'll go through it to end the show. My number one team to start this year. As always, this show brought to you by Monster Energy Drink, because folks, you don't need that third TV in your house. You need to put your fist through it when your team throws a game-ending pick six, because hey, I think we've all done it. I haven't, but I know people who have. So hey, drink Monster. As I said today on the show, we're going to go over just kind of really a big time preview and the 10,000 and 10-foot view of this college football season. So, I think you have to start any college football talk. You have to start one place. And I don't think it's just college football. I think it's college sports in general. And it's what's permeated college sports now for 4 years, and that's NIL. You see these numbers being thrown around, and look, I'm not naive. People are going to continue throwing money around. I get that. I go back to something I heard. I guess it was about 4 years ago now. Ryan Russillo on the Ryan Russillo podcast had a guest. I can't remember exactly who it was. It may have been Bruce Feldman. Not 100% sure on that, but they were talking about, at a certain point, are these people not going to get tired of just throwing money, throwing money, throwing money with no tangible return? And it's an interesting question because, you look at the guy who's donating $1,000 a month or $5,000 a month. I mean, that's not small potatoes here. He's putting a decent size investment into this team. He's not seeing anything. I mean, he's not. So at what point is he going to say, what's my $5,000 a month doing? And I don't want to discourage people from giving, because look, you can do whatever you want with your money. That's your money, you earned it. But they don't care. They don't. Because somebody else will give them $5,000 a month. The people they care about are the guys giving $1 million a month or $100,000 a month or whatever it may be. Because those are the guys that you got to keep happy. Those are the guys that are going to fund your program. And look, let's be honest here. They've always funded your program. But back to what I heard 4 years ago now, and I heard it on credit to Ryan Russillo on this. And they were talking about, these guys and where this ends, where does this fall off a cliff? And the guest said, I don't know that it does. And he expounded on that a little bit with this. He said, you look at these guys, whether it be a Larry Ellison at Michigan's probably not the greatest example because he can literally buy a team. But look at Todd Graves with LSU. Look at Dickie Scruggs and David Nutt with Ole Miss. Look at Jimmy Rain with Auburn. They have a ton of money, but they don't have I can own a sports team money. And that was the point, because at the time, Michigan State basketball was being funded by two people, Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Matt Ishbia, who now owns the Phoenix Suns, but at the time he did not own a sports team. And the point they were making was these two guys were basically trying to say, I own Michigan State basketball. So for these guys that have that amount of money, this is kind of like owning a sports team to them. So yeah, they'll continue to throw money at it because you know what? That stokes their ego in a way. I don't know that it's the best thing, but it's their money. Do with it what you will. I think how this kind of wraps into things though is you look at what we're now paying some of these guys. And look, I'm not saying don't go get your money. Go get your bag. Go get it. Because, you know, hey, you've got a short shelf life in this stuff. So go get the money you make while you can make it. But, you know, you look at a guy like Jackson Arnold at all. Jackson Arnold is paid by, you know, most sources, $2.5 million to come play at Auburn. What is the record where Auburn's going to say this was successful? Is it 8-5? Because I don't think 8-5 saved Hugh Freeze's job, but I think it's a definite improvement. So is that successful to Auburn? Is that a good investment? Because at what point does it go from a bad investment to a good one? Because, I mean, you can use any example you want. I'll use my team, Mississippi State. You know, we played Blake Shapen seven figures. Do I know the exact amount? No, but I know every SEC quarterback's making seven figures. So I'm going to go ahead and just kind of go out in a pretty sturdy limb here and say Blake Shapen's making seven figures. Now, if Blake Shapen goes and leads Mississippi State to 6-6 this year, that is a wild success for Mississippi State to go 6-6. Wild success. That is a hell of a return on your investment right there. But take LSU, Garrett Nussmeier. Garrett Nussmeier is probably making three plus. LSU goes 6-6. They're ready to burn Tiger Stadium down and help Brian Kelly move. So I would love to say that there's this, you know, there's this line in the sand where it's a good investment over a bad investment, but it's not because any team can have what they consider a good investment. You know, at LSU, it's make the playoffs. If somebody told you at Mississippi State that Blake Shapen had to make the playoffs or had to lead Mississippi State to the playoffs to make it a good investment, well, that's not happening. It's going to be a terrible investment because we're not making the playoffs. It's interesting to look at that because it's this sliding scale, and you almost have to wonder if it's going to get to a point where a quarterback says, all right, well, I may take $1 million from, you know, Purdue, go lead them to seven wins, six wins, and then I can go get my $3.5 million from Penn State the next year. You know, I've raised expectations somewhere, so I can go get even more money. It's an interesting thought process that I think we are going to start seeing a little bit more of because. Look, if the guy can go get $1 million, play 12 games, and then go get three and a half the next year, why would he not do that? Because, you know, and the argument there is, well, why didn't he just go get the three and a half now? Well, the three and a half may not be there now. It may be a choice between 1 million from team A that went 3-9 or 1.3 million from team B that went 7-5. Now I can go 7-5 with team A and I'll get $1 billion, but I can go 6-6 or 7-5 with team B, and my butt's on the first train out. They don't want me back. So I think that's going to be interesting to see, you know, kind of where we start setting expectations for these quarterbacks because, and I say quarterbacks because they're going to be the highest paid. I mean, they're what is driving this market, basically. So, kind of in that same vein, we talk about, and I brought up all those guys that had a bunch of money, whether it be a Todd Graves at LSU, whether it be a David Nutt or Dickie Scruggs at Ole Miss, whether it be a Jimmy Rayne at Auburn. The new guy on the block, Cody Campbell at Texas Tech, who has just now decided that he's going to buy Texas Tech into being a blue blood and it being in Texas. It reminds people of one thing, and it's SMU. And now SMU, good in their own right, but Cody Campbell is kind of a new age Sherwood Blunt almost. And I think this is going to be the most interesting case study for the next 5 years over how Texas Tech does, because, can you buy your team in the blue blood status? Because in the Big 12, it's going to be infinitely easier to get to the playoffs than it would be in the SEC. But what do you do when you get there? You look at this team that they've built, and look, it's going to be a good team, and it's going to be a good team for years to come. But, this is a Steve Sarkisian quote when he got to Texas. He said, our starters were pretty good, but we had no depth. So, can Texas Tech build that depth? I don't know the answer to that, because look, at a certain point, this has a cutoff. Because look, whether people like it or not, rev shares is real. You have a cap you cannot go over. You can call it a salary cap because that's what it is. I'm just saying the quiet part out loud on that one. But you look at this team that they're building and the recruits they're bringing in, and it makes you think, hey, this thing's sustainable. But the difference is that we haven't seen it on the field. I mean, it's not like, I mean, look, Cody Campbell had all his money 2 years ago. But you look at that, and you look at the results of last year, where, okay, they had a decent year. They were not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but they went 8-5. I mean, that's a team that cost probably $14 or $15 million, went 8-5. That's not a blue blood. Blue bloods don't go 8-5. They just don't. So it's going to be interesting to see this year what happens if they go 8-5? What happens if they go 8 and 9 and 4? Because I'm going to sit here and tell spoiler on my bold takes here, Texas Tech ain't getting in the playoff. They're not. They're not one of the top three teams in the Big 12 right now. And I'll get to that, but Texas Tech also doesn't have a really great quarterback. And it's shocking that they bought all these guys and they're buying all these recruits, but they didn't go get a quarterback. I mean, yeah, I get that, you're happy with, I guess, what you got and all that, but like, go get a quarterback. I mean, if you think you're going to be this elite team, then, elite teams get quarterbacks. That's just, I mean, I could be completely wrong, but Baron Morton ain't leading you to the playoff. He's not. So I don't know. I think they want to act like a blue blood, but it's almost like they're doing it in a cheap way. Like, okay, we're going to go get the defensive tackle, the defensive lineman, the offensive tackle, the wide receiver. This game is won and lost at one position. It is at the quarterback position. If you do not have a quarterback, you will not make the playoff. Period. Find me one playoff team last year that didn't have that won, and despite their quarterback, there wasn't one. There wasn't. A lot of people want to say Ohio State. Look, Will Howard played really good in the playoffs. He did. So no. Texas Tech's not making the playoffs, and I don't think they make it next year either. And then you get into the question of, well, when is Joey McGuire going to be fired and they're going to go get a top five coach? Because that's always the next thing. And it's, oh, it's the coach. It's not that we don't know how to develop, we don't know how to identify talent. It's the coach can't coach him up. Because I've seen it. I have. So I think that's going to be a wildly interesting thing to watch, not just this year, but over the next few years, just to see what they become. Because can they become SMU in the 80s? Because now it's legal. It's going to be wildly interesting, I'll say that. I think the last big storyline we'll get into before we get into the games that I think are going to affect college football playoff is going to be who's on the hot seat going into the year. Because look, number one is, I think without a doubt, Hugh Freeze. You can twist it whatever way you want. Hugh Freeze needs nine. He needs nine, and it's got to be the right nine to get to 2026, because 8-4 is not going to cut it. This is a team that has not beaten Alabama since 2019, I believe. I mean, they're not going to stand to lose again. They're just not. I mean, you look at Auburn's schedule, and man, it's not easy. Like, it's not. And it's going to get dicey. It's like I told somebody yesterday. Auburn has to start at a minimum 4-1, and they really need to be 5-0. Can they get there? I don't think they can. The most important game of the Hugh Freeze era is, I mean, it's coming up in 3 weeks. And you don't really ever think, oh, the most important game of a coach's tenure is week one. Well, it is. Because Friday, August 29th in Waco, Texas, is the most important game of the Hugh Freeze era. Because if they lose to Baylor, this thing can get off the rails fast. I think number two, if you're going to rank them, I guess, would be Lincoln Riley. I mean, this has been a tenuous tenure, I guess you could say. You come in with all this pomp and circumstance. You got Colin Cowherd saying that he's going to donate to NIL. You're going to get podcasts with players, and you're going to bring all this fame and glory back to USC. You're going to bring back the early 2000s with Pete Carroll. And year one, you had this great offense, but you had absolutely no defense. Absolutely no defense. Year two with Caleb again, by the way. You still didn't really have a defense, and your offense wasn't as good. Year three, it just kind of kept going downhill. And now in year four of this thing, I mean, what is it going to take for them to stay off Lincoln's back, basically? I think he's got to go 9-3. I do. I think he's got to go at a minimum 9-3. And I don't know that he can get there. I really don't. I'll be honest with you. I don't know that he gets there. Number three, and I don't know his hot seat as much as I think he's probably just going to retire, is Sam Pittman at Arkansas. I think Sam's probably ready to get it done. Look, they brought in Petrino for a reason. So I think that's the reason. I think Petrino ends up taking over there. Number four, we heard it all last year. Billy Napier, Billy Napier, Billy Napier, Billy Napier. I don't know how much grace Billy bought himself, but I mean, he's got another terrible schedule. I think 7-5 probably keeps his job, but it's something to watch if things get off the rails. And look, you start the way they do, there is a possibility for that. You mean you got LSU and Miami in your first 4 weeks? Like, not easy. And by the way, you got to go on the road to both those places. So now, as we move into what I think will be probably the most impactful games of the college football schedule, I mean, I know a lot of people may be overlooking this because it's week zero. But I really believe Kansas State, Iowa State is going to be a massive game in the college football playoff, I guess, going forward. You look at these teams, and they're predicted to be in the top four of the Big 12, which I wholeheartedly agree with. But I mean, you start 1-0, and you beat one of those quote unquote premier teams for this year. I mean, I think you set yourself apart that, you're getting ready to make that move, make that jump. And you especially take a team like Iowa State, who was one game from the playoff last year, They run into probably one of the hottest teams in the country at the end of the year in Arizona State and just absolutely worked in the Big 12 championship. But I mean, that's a team that was one away last year. This year you look at their schedule, they don't have to play Arizona State. They don't have to play Texas Tech. They really just, they get Kansas State and they got to go to Colorado and to TCU. But I mean, you miss Texas Tech. You miss Baylor. You get BYU at home, who's not going to be as good without Jake Retzlaff. You do have to go to Colorado. You do have to go to TCU. But when you miss two of those other top four teams, I think you got a favorable schedule. And then you flip over to Kansas State and you look at their schedule. And yeah, they got to go to Baylor. But they get TCU at home. They get Colorado at home. They get Texas Tech at home. So, you start rolling through, and yeah, they play those teams, but they're in Manhattan. And that's a tough place to play, no matter what way you look at it. That's a tough place to play. And, I don't think Kansas State has lost. I don't think they've lost but like two or three home games the last like 3 or 4 years. I mean, you look at their schedule last year, they lost one home game to Arizona State. You look at the year before, they lost one home game to Iowa State. So, I mean, it's two home losses in 2 years. And so, I mean, this is a team, and then you go back to the year before, and they just had a weird loss to Tulane at home and then lost to Texas. So, I mean, this is a team that's pretty elite at home. So, if you're Kansas State, you're like, we get by this one, we got a shot at this thing. And if you're Iowa State, you're like, we get by this one, we're in the Big 12 championship. We just got to take care of our business. So, I mean, I don't think I've ever said this about a week zero game, but look, that game carries real implications moving forward. I think game number two is, I mean, it's the obvious one. It's Texas, Ohio State. It's week one, 11 a.m. in the horseshoe. What's Arch Manning going to look like? What are the defending national champions going to look like? Because, they still have playoff or I guess aspirations. But they don't know what they're doing at quarterback yet because it looks like it's still a competition between Julian Stein and Lincoln Kleinholz. Stein's probably going to win that. And look, whoever wins it, it doesn't matter because you got Jeremiah Smith to throw to. But on the other side, you have Texas, who has made the playoffs 2 straight years, made the SEC championship their first year in the conference. And they have a Manning under center or behind center since nobody gets under center anymore. But I mean, I think that game is just paramount to what's going to happen for the rest of the year. Because look, especially for Ohio State, because Texas has games that they can still win and say, okay, like we can get back there even with a loss. A loss is not going to kill us. But you look at Ohio State and their schedule. Yeah, they get Texas. But then it's like you get Penn State and you go to Michigan. So if you're Ohio State, you're like, this is kind of our chance. Because if Ohio State loses that one, they probably got to go 11-1. They could get in at 10-2, but I think they probably would need to go 11-1. But if they win it, you got cushion there that, okay, we could afford a loss at Michigan or to Penn State. Nuh-uh. Yeah, I mean, you still could. But if you're Texas, you're like, okay, we would love to win this because it would, say, hey, we're here. Arch Manning's here. We're going to be dominant this year. But you're not dead in the water because you do have games moving forward that will help you. Game three on my list. We talked about it earlier with Billy, Florida LSU. I mean, I left off LSU Clemson just because I didn't want everything to be week one or week zero. But LSU Clemson's a huge game. I think it kind of falls into that category, though, of both teams would be okay if they lo lost. Like, no team is dead in the water with a loss week one. Because if you're Clemson, you're the overwhelming favorite, really, to get to the ACC championship or, be one of the teams there. And if you're LSU, you have so many more games that will help you, whether that be Florida, whether that be Ole Miss, whether that be Alabama, whether it be Texas A&M, South Carolina. Like, you have a ton of games that will help you out if you were to lose week one in fake Death Valley, because the real Death Valley is Baton Rouge. Game number four. Or, well, I guess we can talk a little bit more about Florida LSU. Florida's kind of in that same boat that, like, okay, if they do need a win. Don't get me wrong. I don't think anybody's ever going to say, well, man, this one's whatever. We don't have to win this one. No, it's an SEC game. You want to win. But if you look at their schedule remaining, I mean, they're at Miami the next week. They got Texas 2 weeks after that. They go to A&M. They get Georgia. They go to Ole Miss. They have Tennessee. Like, they've got opportunities. Still a big game because it's still your first SEC game and you want to start 1-0. Game four, Oregon Penn State. I think that game, I think the winner of that game is probably guaranteed a spot in the playoffs, because if you win that game, you obviously are going to have the type of season you want to have. I think it's more important for Oregon than it is Penn State, just because it's Oregon's first time in Happy Valley as a member of the Big Ten. And I think it'll just be, it'll be a big win for Dan Lanning. But at the same time, you look at it from the Penn State side is, James Franklin's inability to quote unquote win the big one. Can he get it done? I don't know the answer to that, but he did show a little bit, at least at the end of the year, that in the playoff he could win a big game. He did beat Georgia. Or no, that was Notre Dame. Never mind. He beat Boise State. Never mind. So yeah, James Franklin still can't win the big one. Game, I guess five. It's Alabama, Georgia. I don't really think that needs all that much, like, just talk. It's Alabama, Georgia. It is a big game every time these two teams play. Game six. Look, I'm just being honest. Like, when has Alabama, Georgia not been a big game? Like, 2000, I don't know, whenever they played in the early 2000s, when Alabama was mired and still trying to find Bear Bryant. Game six, though, I'll be honest, I did not know this game was being played till literally I was making this rundown and looking at this stuff. Boise State, Notre Dame. Late season game? Boise State needs that one. Because, you look at the other teams that are going to be in that, trying to get that group of five spot, whether it be a service academy like Navy, a AAC team like Tulane or Memphis, or a fellow Mountain West team like UNLV. Boise State's going to need something to separate them. You put a win at Notre Dame on your resume, yeah, that's going to separate you pretty well. Notre Dame, again, it's a lot more important for Boise State than it is Notre Dame, but it's an important game nonetheless, because if Boise State is having the season people believe they will have, that's going to be a top 20, top 25 team coming into Notre Dame Stadium. And look, Marcus Freeman needs a win. He needs to back up the playoff performance with another strong year, or people's just going to say you're a one-hit wonder. Obviously, folks, there are more big games, and I think it's like anything when you do these preseason, shows, you don't know what the big games are until you get into the season. I mean, did anybody think Arizona State BYU was going to be a marquee game last year? No, everybody thought Arizona State was going to go 3-9, including, unfortunately, Mississippi State fans. Kind of missed on that one. But the point is, like, nobody knows these big games until you get into that spot. I mean, did anybody look at, Texas, Texas A&M? Yeah, it's a huge game, but did we think it was for a playoff berth or a spot in the SEC championship? No, nobody did. So I think it's fun to do this, but at the same time, you don't know the big games until you get into that point. I mean, I would love to say that Mississippi State Tennessee is going to be a massive game because I'd love Mississippi State to be 4-0 at that point. I don't know that it's going to happen, but or that it would really affect the college football playoff. But if we got to 5-0, hey, weird things happen. But now we're going to move into the bold predictions I have for the year. You can call them bold, hot take, cold take. I really don't care. It's just what I think. Number one, I don't think the SEC or the Big Ten gets five teams in, and I think one of them is only going to get three. I think there's a shot both get three because you look at the Big Ten and Penn State's kind of the team that everybody's talking about, and then everybody's kind of trying to figure out whether it's Oregon or Ohio State or even Illinois, like who's going to be those other teams, and then I guess Indiana's there because they play a joke of a schedule again. That's another podcast for another time about how much of a joke I think all that is. But regardless, I look at the SEC and I just think it's a better conference, but we're not going to get into that. I think it's going to be a struggle for teams to make the playoffs this year, especially in the SEC. I don't know as much the Big Ten, but especially the SEC because I really, really believe it's going to be a struggle because, the SEC is just so good this year. Like it's just so good. You look at all these teams that are kind of projected, and you can go down and down and down. And I mean, you look at a team like South Carolina, who, I mean, they were right on the cusp last year. Could they jump up and make it? You got LSU. You got Florida. Florida has a good year. They could make it. There's people that are picking Oklahoma. I mean, and then you go to the Big Ten, and it's just like it's Ohio State, Penn State. And like Oregon, I guess. It's kind of meh. But I don't think either of them get five, and I don't know. I think one's going to get three. Because I think the SEC got four and the Big Ten got four last year. I'd have to look at the bracket to remember that. It's been so long now that let me actually look that up and look at the bracket here. Okay, the SEC had one, two, three. So the SEC only had three last year, and the Big Ten, I guess, had four. Because the Big Ten had one, two, three. Four. Yeah, so the Big Ten, okay. Anyways, I don't think either of them get five. I think one gets three, and I think they may both get three. I think the Big 12, this point number two, I think the Big 12 is going to get two teams in. And I don't think either team's going to be Texas Tech because I think the Big 12 is, I think the two teams, if I had to call it today, I think it's going to be Iowa State. And I think I'm going to shock people. I think it's going to be Baylor. I think Baylor makes the playoffs. But look, Baylor has what you want: experience at quarterback. They have a good defense. And they play a schedule that's not just like going to kill them. I think even if they didn't make the Big 12 championship, I think they could make the College Football Playoff because now it's just straight seeding. And so you don't have to worry about, oh, I gotta have this, and this. It's just straight up seeded. And I think that helps a team like a Baylor or if Iowa State was to not make the Big 12 championship. So those are my two Big 12 teams. I think they both make it. And then my biggest hot take, And my biggest bold prediction of the year, Navy, the midshipmen, will make the college football playoff. They will beat Tulane in the AAC title game to make the playoffs. Go service academies. It's going to be electric watching the triple option be run, or the flex moan or whatever, be run in a college football playoff, because it's going to be awful to defend. I can't wait. And now we will close this thing down with a couple of thoughts. First off, we will not have a show next week, but we will be back the next week twice to start discussing week zero and get into a little bit of week one. I'm going on vacation next week, so we'll not be around. But closing out, my number one team in the country going into this year, there's a lot of teams that I could have chosen. There's not, I mean, obviously nobody cares. It's preseason, so nobody cares. But if you have to ask me right now who's my number one team in the country, I think it's the Texas Longhorns. I think they are the most complete team in college football. It's why I think they go into the Horseshoe week one, and I think they beat Ohio State. It's why I think they will go 11-1 with their only loss coming at Georgia. And I hate to say it, I do think they win the SEC this year. I think they win it in year two, and I think they're the number one overall seed at 12-1 going into the playoffs. So that is my number one team for the year, and that is our podcast for the day. Happy hunting, everybody. And hey, it's close. It's almost here. We are 14 days away from week zero, and we are 21 days away from the coup de grace, week one. Have a good one, everybody.